Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Mark and Sarah talk about songs. They talk about songs.
We do talk about songs, and we're going to talk about a whole brace of songs today. I think a brace is actually literally four. I'll have to look that up. First, let me introduce myself. I'm your co-host, Sarah D. Bunting. I'm here, as always, with the fandiferous Mark Blankenship. Hello, Mark.
I wore braces.
Wait, which kind of braces? Suspenders or, like, on your teeth?
Well, depending on the day, both, but definitely on my teeth for four long years.
Wow.
With headgear, too.
Oh, I had headgear, too, and when they finally said I didn't have to wear it anymore, I couldn't sleep without it.
Yeah, I only had to wear it at night, but oh my God,
yeah,
yes, I got...
Same.
Ugh.
Same, and then my pillow was like too close to my face for like 2 weeks. I was like, I can't get to sleep. Anyway, here's the point. We actually talk about songs and not orthodonture, and we are, as you are, listeners, in the midst of this confusing and anxiety-inducing pandemic, and... Our incomes are uncertain at best. So if you are still working and if you are able to contribute to our Patreon page, we would really appreciate it. That's at patreon.com/mastass. There's extra content. There's ranking singles that are not available in Gen Pop. You will have access to the Mastappy Hour, which we really enjoy doing on Zoom, and we've had some wonderful chats with you guys. If you can't do it, you can't. Everybody's feeling the pinch and the uncertainty, and we'll keep doing this podcast whether you like it or not. But if you do like it and you have a couple of bucks, much of our Patreon content is available to contributors at any level. So once again, that's patreon.com/mastass. We would super appreciate it. Thank you so much in advance if you can help out. And if you can't, we love to hear from you anyway. There is a little tag at the end of the episode that lets you know how to get in touch with us. So keep an ear out for that. And now, finally, the topic of our episode, Mark... It's about to get shady in here. Please tell the listeners why that is.
Yes. Yeah, so the theme of today's episode is one that I was inspired to suggest to Sarah while making dinner and listening to a Spotify playlist. I will get into that in a second. But the theme today is songs we like by artists we don't. And we have both chosen two songs by two artists for whom we typically have nothing but bile and rancor, but who, in this one 3 to 4.5 minute occasion, managed to deliver something that we actually have to acknowledge that we like. So it's an interesting way of investigating taste, aesthetics, preferences, the fungibility of a relationship to an artist. It's also an interesting way of letting ourselves be real fucking shady, but then also be like, but this song's okay. So, you know, like a little bitter, a little sweet. On our first Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs live stream happy hour, Sarah brought in a Mastass cocktail that was Sunny Delight plus bitters. and I can't remember what else, but it was like, that's what this is.
Your choice, and then club soda for fizz.
Yes. So a little Sunny D, a little bitters, and a little just D. So I think that we're starting with one of mine. Is that right?
We are.
So why don't I then say, because we are starting with the song that kicked all of this off for me. I was making dinner a few weeks ago before the plague. Remember back when you were like, if I run out of something, I'll just go get more. There's no way they won't have it.
I remember that, and it's only been a few weeks. Yikes. Anyway.
But I was listening to a Spotify playlist of the top 100 songs of 1991, because I am myself, and up came the Motown song by Rod Stewart, which reached number 10, featuring The Temptations. And I was listening to this song, and I was remembering very clearly when it used to come on the radio, and I realized, whoa, this is a Rod Stewart song that I'm not physically furious to hear. As longtime listeners have known, Da Ya Think I'm Sexy makes both Sarah and I want to commit some sort of crime.
Tonight, have I told you lately that I hate you?
Yeah, seriously. Maggie May really could have murdered without getting a single juror in the world to convict. Mm-hmm. But for whatever reason, and I actually have some theories about why, but the Motown song does not make me mad. So before we discuss, here's a clip. Just like the music's saying, you gotta take chances. Go ahead, just do it, and trust yourself. There's a soul in the city watching over us tonight. There's a soul in the city saying everything's gonna be alright. So bring on a song, your own Motown records. Yeah, like, Sarah, I don't know. The song is charming to me, and the Temptations adding harmony vocals doesn't hurt, and it has a nice bounce. There's an innocent joy, I think, to be had, and just a nice nostalgic look back at the music and wanting to put your speakers in the window and just dance around on the roof. Like, I like that. I get that. I think that one of the reasons I don't hate this song the way that I hate so many Rod Stewart songs is it doesn't sound like a Rod Stewart song. He's not being grossly lascivious. He is not trying to croon in a way that he does when he covers the American Songbook. He's just like relaxed, and the rhythm of the song is carrying him along, and I don't know, I don't hate it. It makes me pretty happy, as Rod Stewart songs go.
I am so happy for you that you found something in the Rod Stewart songbook to enjoy. Should we talk about the next song? Just kidding. I despised this song from the minute it started. This is the closest I have ever come to quitting in under 2 minutes of a song. I managed, but my notes say things like, Jesus fucking Christ, how is this piece of shit still happening to me? I'm like, there's like the beginning of a letter to my congressman. That is on me. Like, I get why you respond to it, and I don't think that's like wrong, but to me, this just feels like something. I feel like everyone involved is worsened by their association with it, including me for hearing the whole thing. This sounds like something that the Temptations rewrote to sell kitty litter.
Bring over some of that good kitty litter. You put the tabby
for your felines. Woo. No. No.
The kitty cat has got you to make a poopy poo, and you know you gotta clean it up.
My temptation is to send some cat poo to Rod Stewart for creating this.
Well, you know, I will say,
it's actually not that bad. I disliked it immediately, and I couldn't even listen to it again. That I was just like, I am just like, this is such a knee jerk thing, and I should listen to it again, but I can't do that.
Well, even the clip must have been painful for you then.
It wasn't great.
Well, I will tell you, here's something that I shouldn't have done. I should not have rewatched the music video, which I had forgotten about, honestly.
Oh, was there a lot of prancing? There was. Was there.
Okay, I'm about to describe this music video to you, and I promise I'm not making any of this up. The premise of the music video is that a live-action Rod Stewart is animating the video himself. So there's this interplay between live-action and animated Rod Stewart, and then animated Rod Stewart has an animated puppy dog sidekick. And they're all in this like New York neighborhood listening to music and enjoying themselves. And then animated versions of pop stars from 1991 show up, and a group of local kids, some of them black, some of them white, all of them dressed like stereotypical 1991 teenagers, start punishing the contemporary pop stars for making contemporary music, because instead the only music that counts is the old Motown sound. So Vanilla Ice has a bucket of ice dropped on his head. Michael Jackson moonwalks and they pull the cover off a manhole and he falls down. Madonna steps out of a limousine wearing the outfit that she wore to sing Sooner or Later at the Oscars, and the outfit gets caught in the door of the limo and it pulls off her clothes to reveal just her cone bra outfit. But to its credit, this moment is kind of funny. She's like, whatever, and she just keeps on walking. And Sinead O'Connor is shaving her head and gets so startled by the sound of the music that she cuts her head with a razor, and then you see her crying with band-aids on her head. And it's so gross and mean-spirited to all of these people, especially now that what we know about Sinead. But it's like, you know what? Fuck off. Fuck off for insisting that there's only one type of appropriate music and that you're charming for punishing contemporary stars. Like, you can be reminiscent of and nostalgic for Motown without shitting on what's happening in 1991. So I'm almost talking myself into hating this song, I realize, but it's just the music video that I never need to watch again. I'm still not mad about this song. Now, am I ever going to be like, let me listen to this song first? No. But if someone were to say, do you hate every song by Rod Stewart? I would simply say, almost, and then I would let this one have a pass. That does not mean, however, that I will tonight be rocking out to that fucking awful Three Musketeers song that he sang with Bryan Adams and Sting or anything.
Oh, Jesus.
So, yeah, Rod Stewart.
Usually I'm lunging for whatever console is available to make it stop. It is up there. Rod Stewart's output is very similar to the Cars for Kids commercial, that it's like, I am not capable of coexisting with this shit.
That's fair. So
I think there is actually one Rod Stewart song which is like on brand creepy for him. It was from the early 80s, and there was a video where he was basically stalking his neighbor. Oh,
Infatuation?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, which I, yes, like, that one I can tolerate. I will not depart a moving car while it's on, but
I mean,
everything
I guess,
else can eat bees, which is, he sounds like he did and then went to the studio.
I don't hate the song Some Guys Have All the Luck, but I don't love that song either.
I wish he had some bad luck, like getting kicked in the nuts so hard that it was not possible for him to sing anymore.
Ooh, wow. Another thing that makes me mad about Rod Stewart, the song Reason to Believe is a great song, but his schmaltzy, syrupy MTV Unplugged delivery does that song such an injustice, yeah. And it makes me mad. And even the fucking Wilson Phillips cover of Reason to Believe is less schmaltzy than his, and that's saying something.
All right, speaking of schmaltzy, shall we move on?
I believe it's one of your selections now.
Yes, to the stillbirth known as the song Chances by Five for Fighting, which I didn't even realize was a person. Did you know that?
Yeah, he's just the one guy. Yeah.
I feel like everyone knew that but me, because I was pointedly averting my eyes from any information about Five for Fighting, because I was like... It's so, like, aggressively boring. Anyway, on that note, let's hear a clip.
Chances are lost, our hopes torn out pages.
Okay, with the disclaimer that I don't expect anyone to also like this song or accept my argument, here is said argument. I think the issue for me with Five for Fighting's catalog, generally, like 100 Years and other shite like that, is that it feels very... It's like all icing and no cake. It's all chorus and no verse. It's like directly to this like concentrated, unearned chorus bombast. It's like an all release without enough buildup. So the emotion is out of whack. The piano tends to underline that lack of balance in aural emotion, in my opinion. This song is no different in that regard, but there is something about the harmonies and the falsetto that, because it's a little bit fugazi, feels much more sincere than most Five for Fighting songs. And while I probably did hear this as a promo for some CW show that I'm 58 years old to too old to be watching, and I'm sure that's what that was for, because that's what all his songs are for, is like late season Smallville promos, like we say goodbye to a late legend, like nobody calm down, everyone. But there's something about this one that feels more like less assembled as promotional product and more felt. And it is appealing to me for that reason. Like, just the chord progressions are more appealing. They're not terribly different from anything else he does, but for some reason, this is the one that I attached to, whereas the others are like, I don't even know. It's like the, it's like the color of no color. It's like the color of a white t-shirt that is 20 years old. His music, usually. This one is, like, actually identifiable beige, but still, that's an improvement. Mark, what was your experience of enduring this song?
You know, one of the reasons that this podcast marriage works is because I really also fucking hate Five for Fighting.
Like, I mean, I'm surprised you even can muster up that intensity of feeling about it. I'm like, I guess
you're right. Like, there, but you know, he definitely rides in the same lane as Train, our sworn enemy. But the thing that I could never forgive Five for Fighting for is for his first hit song, which was the song "It's Not Easy," or Superman (parentheses It's Not Easy), a whole song in which he whines about how hard it is to be a straight white man. It's not easy to be me. I will never forget my friend Amy Watt be listening to that song and being like, except it kind of is.
Yeah, except it is the easiest to be you, Vladimir.
Like, yeah, boo, everybody has hard things that happen to them. That is 100% true. And in saying Black Lives Matter, I know he's never said anything like this, but like, You're not saying that Black Lives Matter and therefore no other lives matter. You're saying Black Lives Matter and are often treated as though they don't. So, I don't know. Even in like 2002, I was just like not in a place to hear Five for Fighting talk to me in his whiny way. Well, and then that
it's
song,
just this, like the actual literal whine is this like poor man's Dave Matthews situation. That's like,
yes.
The actual Dave Matthews was more than enough. Thanks.
And then, oh God, yeah, seriously, it's another one I just can't. I've never, ever understood why they are so popular, but I can't even get into that right now. Okay, and then I also agree with you that that song, 1,000 Years or whatever that song is called, it's 15, there's still time. He's like, shut up.
Yeah, like, eh.
So, and he is also so guilty. You said, I think earlier, it was colossally boring or something. It's just that Starbucks soundtrack wash of music that it has no, all of the edges have been sanded off. Mm-hmm. It's like that Phil Collins Tarzan song we talked about a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
You'll Be in My Heart. Like, it just exists to create wallpaper in the sonic space.
Yeah.
To me. And like the earnest, the solipsistic earnestness of it is exhausting. Now, all
grim
of that said,
mock.
Yes.
Is what this is.
Wait, say that again.
Grim mock.
Yes. Oh my God. Grim mock is so right. That is a
drag
queen.
If that's too hard to say, go with grimly mockish. That's what I
that's,
mean.
But grim mock is a drag queen that nobody wants to see perform. And also might be the villain in a Lord of the Rings story. But that being said, this song certainly didn't make me think, ooh, I got to listen to this shit again. But at least he's not complaining about how hard it is to be him. I will say, though, one thing that did make me angry about this song, there's a lyric where he – hold on. I actually – vamp for a second. You're going to hear clicking because I need to look up the lyrics for the song to give it a particularly – accurate read.
I think that all of these songs are trying to be these like graduation time, like message in a bottle soundtrack, profound lyrics that, like I said before, like he's only interested in that like yank a nose hair emotional payoff. So it's like all cheese, no cracker. But then
yes.
At the same time, the cheese is like the mildest possible cheddar that won't offend anyone. So
like John Denver's Annie's song is a super fucking cheesy song that I actually love because it has the musical sparseness to sound emotionally forthright. Like,
yeah,
it's
this
all
is like. Piano runs that you're
yes.
like, no, this is too much.
Like he and any song to me is the perfect example of a cheesy song that really works for me, and it's for all of the things that this song isn't. Now I would like to now quote to you the lyrics from this song, Chances by Five for Fighting, that made me crazy. I'm just a realistic man, a bottle filled with shells and sand, afraid to love beyond what I can lose when it comes to you. What? How does in any way calling yourself a bottle filled with shells and sand make you seem realistic? First of all, a bottle filled with shells and sand doesn't signify anything. It doesn't signify anything. That is not a commonly understood metaphor. So if you're going to use it in a song, you have to explain it to me a little bit. You can't just assume that I think it means that you're realistic, because what the fuck are you talking about? Then, afraid to love beyond what I can lose when it comes to you. What does that mean? Does it mean that you want to
Here's
stay...
Here's what it means. I have commitment issues, which is why I'm telling you now that I'm going to cheat on you and you don't get to be mad about it. That's what that shit is.
The thing is, if I...
Welcome to Straight Boy Stan. Fuck that.
If I really
Shut
sit
up,
down
and...
If I really sit down and parse what and is saying here, I can see that there is some like vague meaning, but like it shouldn't have to be so fucking difficult to get to it with your crappy metaphors. That being said, you're not wrong. There is like a musical quality to this song that is slightly more engaging than other songs. So you're right. It's beige, not old t-shirt.
Yeah.
There it is.
Like you're still being manipulated, but it actually like kind of gets halfway to working this time.
Yes. Yes. Which in a way is actually makes it... the guy in Five for Fighting is not untalented. He has skill. It's just that he uses his skill to do this.
Yeah. Well, I hope that he has made a lot of money and invested it wisely and is actually not this, like, you know, toxic masculinity guy.
Disguised as sensitive masculinity, which is the most dangerous kind.
That's some... Yeah, that's some Groban shit happening right there. Or not Groban. Adams? Ryan Adams? Is that the...
Oh, yeah, Ryan Adams. Josh Groban, we love. But yes, Adams. Honestly, yeah. There are many, many wonderful Ryan Adams songs, and it makes me sad that he was gaslighting Mandy Moore, because I can't bring myself to quit some of the Ryan Adams songs that I love. But oh my God, also that
guy. We should
guy.
Talk about him one day.
Yeah.
Today, unfortunately... We're going to have to talk about some country with a K.
Yes. Now we're transitioning from the adult contemporary men to the country men. I also don't think it's an accident that both of us choose only male artists for this episode.
Yeah.
Okay, so my second choice today is by Kenny Chesney. Now, it turns parts of my stomach and heart to even say the name. Kenny Chesney, most of the time, embodies everything that I think is terrible about mainstream country music. Here are the names of some Kenny Chesney albums that make me angry. No Shoes, No Shirt, No Problems.
No Thanks.
All I Want for Christmas is a Real Good Tan.
That's not what I heard.
Oh! And then allegedly. Finally, the one that I find almost the most unbearable, Just Who I Am, : Poets and Pirates. Like, I just really need you
shut
to...
Shut up, Ed.
The song that we're about to hear, though, this album title is the one that made me want to drive to his house and
punch him
in the dick.
The song that I have chosen is called Somewhere With You, and it is from an album called Hemingway's Whiskey.
No. Oof. Unacceptable.
It actually just gave me the dumb chills just to say that aloud. But the thing is, Kenny Chesney is one of those country stars who has traded what seems to be all actual authenticity for the performance of authenticity. He performs this obsession with boats, fishing, islands, drinking tequila at a sunset on the beach. Like, there's another song on this album called You and Tequila featuring Grace Potter, which is not a terrible song, honestly, but it's still like...
And apparently it did quite well.
It did, though. He's had every song he releases is a huge hit because he's, I don't know. But the thing is, I'm sure that in his actual life, Kenny Chesney likes boats, tequila, islands, the sunset, all of that shit. I'm sure he does, but the way he sings about it so aggressively with such endless, unnuanced adoration makes it impossible for me to believe him. And it really feels like all of his songs, well, with the exception of the song I'm about to mention, are created in a lab because they're marketing tools, not because they're artistic expressions. And we have spoken so many times about the fact that a song can be a marketing tool and still be fucking great. But there's just something about this gross, smarmy,
like
arrogance,
performatively heterosexual drinking of barbecue sauce straight from the bottle that's like, who is
yes.
this for?
And there's this aggression in the way that this gets put across by him and many other male country artists. There's this aggression that's like, I am performing how laid back and cool and real I am. But what I'm also saying is, I hate you if you're not like me.
Yeah.
And underneath...
And if you hate people who are not like you, possibly because of something that is being suppressed in your own...
Yes.
Emotional now, life. Something like... enjoying the company of other people with external genitalia. I'm not saying, yeah. I'm just saying.
Like, here's the thing. There was a brief moment many years ago when Kenny Chesney was briefly married to Renee Zellweger.
Uh-huh.
And then they annulled that, and they were very vague about why. But it was basically something about, like, you lied
fraud.
About your contract.
The word was fraud. The word
That's
used
right.
was fraud. And then RZ had to walk that shit back and be like, I just met. And then he's like, the fraud was that I didn't really understand what being married was going to be. Like, this is all on his Wikipedia page. And it's like, so what you're saying is that when she didn't always want to accept it, let's say Alma from Brokeback Style. I mean,
allegedly.
And yes, if this is the case, and I have no personal knowledge, and there is obviously, like, I am not judging. It If this is the case, it must be terribly difficult to get from one end of the day to the other as Kenny Chesney. But there's also, like, I didn't watch the whole series run of Nashville, but what they tried to do with, was it Will?
Yeah,
the closeted singer, and he had this, he had a song that I actually paid money to download called A Showman's Life, which was this sort of triplicate lyric about the, you know, how hard it is to be on the road, how people misunderstand what a country singer's life actually is, and then braided into that is, I'm having this faux relationship with this lady that the record company decided it would be good for both of us, but actually I am gay. And I just kept thinking about that song.
Right.
While I was listening to this song, I guess we should probably play a clip, no?
Well, so, yeah, we had a lot to say about. So this is a lengthy but I think necessary prologue to how I generally feel about Kenny Chesney.
Yeah.
And there are a couple of Kenny Chesney songs that I'm like, that's not terrible. Because every now and, like, he is working from a factory, and sometimes the factory spits out a wonderful widget. But then one time, he released a song that I actually love. This is not like the Rod Stewart song, where I'm like, this is actually not terrible. I actually love the song Somewhere With You. Here is a clip from Kenny Chesney's Somewhere With You.
Someone to, I won't feel sorry for me. I'm getting drunk, but I'd much rather be somewhere with you, laughing loud on a carnival ride, driving around Saturday night, made fun of me, singing my song, got a hotel room just to turn you on, said pick me up at 3 a.m. You're fighting with your mom again, and I'd go, I'd go, I'd go somewhere with you.
I think, Sarah, that this song really does a fantastic job of encapsulating the desire that we have for someone we know is terrible for us, and the story that it tells of it being the fucking middle of the night, and this person who is poisoning you calls you and asks you to come over, and you go, and you can't help yourself. This song sounds like that drive that you're making. And there's a desperation and a helpless moving forward quality in the pace of the lyrics and the way he keeps repeating himself certain times, and he's talking faster sometimes, and he is really fucked up over this person, and she's real fucked up too, and they're terrible for each other, but he keeps acknowledging with more and more emotional intensity as the song goes that he cannot help it. And it doesn't matter what he does, he's going to always come. And there's just something about the repetition of, and I'll go, you call me at 3 a.m., you've been fighting with your mom again, and I'll go, I'll go, I'll go. There's a heaviness to it. Just the, I know I'm going to go. It makes me so mad at myself, but I can't stop it. And I think that part of this is because the song was written by a man named Shane McAnally, who is one of the great contemporary country songwriters. He himself is openly gay, and he just manages to write songs with such wonderful points of view about desperation and loneliness. Frankly, he writes about a lot of things, but that's one of his specialties. And I just think that this song is great. It doesn't sound like a country song, really. I mean, country doesn't sound like country anymore either, but this song really feels like it could belong on like a Genesis album, like in from the 90s. And I love it.
It is really well crafted, and it's well executed by Chesney. Like that, the pacing, that incantatory pacing really does a good job reflecting that feeling of, like, in the clip that you just played, he's like, well, you know, I'm drunk, but I'd rather be somewhere with you. The way that that song title is brought back into the lyrics is very clever, but this sense of, like, when you are like a couple sheets to the wind and thinking about this toxic person and sort of like reviewing with yourself those well-worn mental cards of like all the good times, that is how you excuse tolerating the 95% of it that's total shit.
Yes.
Is like the build of it reflects that content and emotion extremely well. And the turn of the song is very, it's cleverly done. It's well executed. And Chesney seems, he seems a little tentative, but he's like, he's in this. Like,
yes,
this is actually him. The song goes on a little too long. I would love for him to re-record it, like, just like differently, or sort of being more comfortable sitting with it and what it what parts of it are him and are his. But compared to the usual like ersatz shit kickery that he's trying to do, this is like, this is a good song.
Yeah.
It's not like a great song, but I was like happy to add it to my library. I was like, oh, this is really good. I totally see what Mark is saying.
And it just speaks to what you just said, that the single he released immediately before this one is called The Boys of Fall, and it's about how much he loves football. It's just like, no,
or
I
like
want...
When the sun goes down, we're going to get drunk again, because we're straight people, and that's what they do, allegedly.
Anybody want to look at a titty? No, Kenny, we don't.
Oh.
But yes, if Kenny Chesney's music...
Look at a titty. Oh, God, I can't. Oh, sorry. Please continue.
Oh, well, that's what straight men say, isn't it? I don't know. So I've heard.
Sure.
But at the end of the day...
The one I live with does seem inclined to want to look at a titty, preferably in, you know, paired form, but...
Your like, field research...
One? Come on.
Your field research has indicated. If this were the type of music that he always made, then I would be much more interested in him. And you saying that you would like him to re-record it then made me think I would also like to hear another artist interpret this song and see how flexible and malleable this song proves to be when in the hands of other people. I think there's really something here for an artist who can dig into pain. Like, what would an Adele cover of this song sound like?
Yeah.
Or even like someone who is a little less of a grand singer, quote unquote, but like there's just an opportunity here for something really fascinating if people covered this song as well. But
or like
at any
one
rate,
of the great funk stars of the 70s. Like,
yes.
What is Billy Preston's version of this going to sound like?
Right. Yes. Like a funkier, like sort of heartbroken R&B vibe on this song. What would Roberta Flack have done with this song in the 70s?
Yes.
Oh, God, we can only dream. Well, and you were saying that this song connects in your mind to the Nashville song?
Yeah, just because, you know, the scuttlebutt, allegedly, at the time of his and Zellweger's brief marriage, was that the fraud in question was his sexual orientation. And I remember thinking how... just how much that was to carry for both of them.
And it's not like it's become easier for a gay person to become a country star. So God bless, he's still releasing music. Like, he's got a song on the charts right now. So
yeah,
I can only imagine if that's true, it must be horrible and my heart breaks for him. That does not excuse the fact that he released a song called Pirate Flag and followed it up with a song called When I See This Bar, and then immediately followed that up with a song called American Kids. Like, that's not okay. But those are aesthetic crimes, and we still find sympathy in our hearts if he is forced to live a hidden life.
Mm. And it also gives us sort of hope that it's like, look, it is possible for this person to engage authentically with a piece of work. And perhaps one of these days he'll just be like, well, fuck it. And emerge.
Seriously, I have 1,000 hits, so fuck y'all.
Yeah. And please, please line up in order of girth, allegedly. Thank you and goodbye. Okay, here's someone who's never going to do that, I feel certain. Our last song is by a country star, American Idol winner, Scotty McCrary. I am rather surprised that I even know this song.
I am too, honestly.
This is Scotty McCreary's hit. I think it charted in 2018.
Oh, it was a big country music hit. Yes. This Is It by Scotty McCreary reached number one on the country airplay chart in 2018-19. And he's had a really sustained and successful career as a country music artist. And he had some initial hits when he was right off of American Idol. Then he sort of disappeared for a while. And then he came back with this album called Seasons Change that was a real big comeback for him. And this is one of the singles from that album. So
I think he was going to college, actually.
Well, that's true. Yes. He stopped being a teenager and then started to grow up and become an adult. And then a lot of people, however, you know, they leave for a few years and they come back and people are like, I don't care. But he managed to break through and reestablish himself as a star.
He did. He had sort of a new, like, scruffed up, less baby fat in the face look. This Is It, he apparently wrote 2 weeks before proposing to his longtime girlfriend. Here's where he starts to lose me with this shit. Not only did he sing this at their reception, but then there are apparently shots of their actual wedding video in the video for this song. Like, is it possible for him to be any extra about this? Like, this is like when you have to sell Trump water on The Celebrity Apprentice. Like, just fucking stop it. However, you have not truly lived until you have been in a bar in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, where a bunch in a converted fire station. Mark, you've been to this bar where a bunch of retired cops are drinking cheap, disgusting American lager and singing along to this without irony. This Is It. Mr. McCreary, take it away.
Way up in the mountains, 4,000 feet high, there's a trail through the trees to a cliff where Carolina meets the sky. Oh, and there's a view I just can't describe. No, we're not there yet, just a few more steps, baby, wait. Okay, you can open your eyes. This is it, this is now, this is what I've been talking about. Looking out, can't you see?
Okay, first I will note that I'm pretty sure he gets to join the We Made a Gazillion Dollars from Wedding Songs club with Richard Marx,
yes,
Brian Adams, and Celine, that they're all sitting around lighting cigars with their money. Maybe he doesn't do that because he seems sort of Jesus-y in this, you know, unreflective way that some people are. But there's something about... there's like a nip down into his lower register that is so fucking sexy in this song. It's even more in the lead up to the second chorus, but that he's like, after he says, okay, and then he just dips down there for a second and you're like, oh, this is a grown up with functioning genitals. Hello. Like, please sing a bunch of, like, you know, this will never happen, I'm sure, but, like, please release an album that is only songs about fucking in bar bathrooms. I will buy it. I will play it every day. You can do this. Like, there is this little hint of, like, Kris Kristofferson, Sam Elliott, like, mustache danger in there that's like, oh.
Mm.
And that's, I mean, part of it is that this song is absolutely weaponized corn syrup in the Steve Wariner mold, and I'm not proud of responding to that, but I do. But part of it is in the middle of that.
You just referenced
like,
Steve Wariner.
Yeah, sorry. Like, holes in the floor of heaven, nothing will get me to cry faster. Hot tip for you listeners. But there's something about this song, and then you're looking around, and there's, like, literally 15 dudes with carry permits, all named Pat, singing to this. Like, what a fucking world. Anyway, that was my first experience of the song. Shazam tells me who it is, and I'm like, oh, fine. God damn it. And then I listen to it, like, I could sing the whole thing, all the parts, including the Git Steel. Again, there is shame surrounding this, but these are my reasons, good or not. Mark, talk to me.
So it's so interesting how successfully you chose artists that you don't like in terms of artists that I don't like. I'm going to tell a long story. Not long, but, you know, it's going to seem like I don't know where I'm going, but I promise
Scott
you I do.
I just talked about Scott McCreary's dick for like 10 minutes.
Yeah. You sure did.
Please,
you basically,
please get us out of here.
You basically got hot and bothered for Scotty McCreary. So
I know.
Okay.
He's still like 12. This is wrong. This is a felony in his state. Anyway.
So I, there have been two instances in my life where I have stopped watching not just an episode of television, but an entire series in the middle of an episode.
Okay.
One was when I was watching the show Person of Interest. With Jim Caviezel and, the guy from Lost, Michael Emerson.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a plot about some mystery they were trying to solve. And they said something that made it clear that in the logic of this show, World War II ended in 1946. Like, the writing was so sloppy that when you then worked backwards from... They said that happened so-and-so years ago in the very last year of World War II... But when you did the math, you realized it was 1946. It made me so angry that I deleted the episode and canceled the series recording on my DVR, and I never watched the show again. Okay. So there's that.
Okay.
The second time that this happened is when I was watching Scotty McCreary's audition on American Idol.
Uh-huh.
And I had already started to feel like I don't need to watch this show anymore. But when he came out...
What was it, season 10?
It was like, yeah, it was late. It was like after it was 2000 and I already lived in this apartment. So it was like late.
Well, he won at the age of 17 and I believe
he's 26
born...
now.
Yeah. God.
So it's been a minute, but when he came out, I heard him do one line in that wild corn pone Alan Jackson voice. And I was like, nope. And I realized I can't. And I never watched the show. Well, I did watch a little bit of the last Fox season, but I basically gave up on American Idol after that. And I have had really no use for Scotty McCreary ever since, and therefore did not even listen to this song when it was a hit. I made the mistake of listening to his previous hit from this album, 5 Minutes More, about how he wishes that grandpa's never died. And it's schmaltzy but effective, but I don't ever want to listen to it again.
Well,
but this song...
No.
When I was listening to it, I got excited in a structural way because you could tell after he takes her up on the top of that mountain and says, this is it, meaning the view, that the language of the chorus is going to change its meaning over the course of the song. This is it is not just going to mean the view. And I got excited the first time I heard it thinking, ooh, where's it going to go? Like, I was thinking it's either going to be, this is it, like, this is our baby. This is it. This is the last time I get to hold you and I'm never going to forget. But like, somehow this is going to change. And then when it was, of course, this is the moment that I want to be married to you. I was like, oh, that's really sweet. So,
well, and then
Scotty
Forever
McCreary
sort of evolves.
Yeah.
Also, like, we could see Forever, like, you can see whatever, to the Virginia line, but you can also see our future down the years. Like, I mean, it's not it's not like Dolly Parton bluegrass level lyrical.
But I am a true sucker for, I'm a sucker for this trope of country music songwriting where the meaning of the same words are repeated, but the context changes. I like that a lot. So
yeah, which Chesney also does in the song we just talked about. So
that's true. So thumbs up to this song. Thank you for introducing it to me.
You are welcome. Yeah, I mean, I have some regrets about things that I've said. about various people's groins in this episode, but you know,
about how hard you would allow Scotty McCreery to get it.
Oh my god, yeah. I mean, I'm still not totally convinced that it's legal. Like, if you were born in the 90s, like,
you are too young to have been aware of the song Vogue, I cannot fuck with you, except apparently, unless I'm Sarah and I'm talking to Scotty McCreery.
It seriously is like a quarter of a second that I was like, huh, look who can rent a car and drive it to my house. Okay.
I'll go. Well, listen, this has been a complicated road that we've walked today, but I am really glad that we dove into this theme. Thank you for being up for it when I suggested it. You are an artist that I do like, Sarah, so it's been a pleasure to explore these songs with you.
This really has been a hilarious, possibly felonious delight. And yes, please serve all papers involving lawsuits, like libel lawsuits, to Mr. Rod Stewart at his home.
A showman's life is a smoky bar, and the fevered chase of a tiny star. It's a hotel room and a lonely wife, from what I've seen of a showman's life. Nobody told me.
Y'all, Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs is hosted by Mark Blankenship, aka me, and Sarah D. Bunting. And it's edited by Sarah D. Bunting as well. Do you want to talk to Mark and Sarah about song requests, ads, or birthday readings? Email us at talkaboutsongs@gmail.com, tweet us at TalkSongs, or find us on Facebook at facebook.com/mastus.podcast. To become a supporter and producer of this podcast, visit our Patreon page at patreon.com/mastus, where you can get access to all kinds of cool bonus content and vote in our ranking episodes. Thanks for listening.
I might have known it, but nobody told me about this part. A boy will dream his children do of a great white way until the dream comes true. Then a phony smile in a colored light. Mark and Sarah talk about songs. They talk about songs.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.